know that sadly this man of God, to God's own heart, was influenced to commit murder. And of course, all of that because of his sin with Bathsheba. And the story of David and Bathsheba became one of sin, regret, forgiveness, and mercy. One of the aspects of this story of David and Bathsheba that we have to also remember is that there were consequences to what happened. It is more than just the child that was born of this union that would die. There were a number of things that when Nathan came to David and told him that God had known what went on and that he would remove the penalty of death, which was according to the law that he would take that away, he did tell him that not only would the child die, but there would be a lot of consequences to what this action would bring. Our text is in 2 Samuel chapter 12, page 362, and we're going to be kind of looking at a number of chapters here very briefly, so we're not going to put all the page numbers, but it's roughly pages 362 to 373, kind of bopping around there, and then 1 Kings 1 and 2, pages 384 to 387. But we remember that in the 11th chapter, David commits his sin with Bathsheba. It's in the 12th chapter that Nathan comes to him and tells him that God knows what is happening and brings his judgment upon him. I'm going to pick up in verse 10. Part of the statement that Nathan makes to David is the consequence that's going to come. And he tells David that now therefore the sword shall never depart from your house because you have despised me and have taken the wife of Uriah the Hittite to be your wife. Thus says the Lord, behold, I will raise up adversity against you from your own house, and I will take your wives before your eyes and give them to your neighbor, and he shall lie with your wives in the sight of this son. For you did it secretly, but I will do this thing before all Israel, before the sun. And we don't see a lot of that immediately, of course, but we know that after Nathan leaves, the child is sick, the child dies about a week later. But we see, if you read the history of David, that his days are filled with great trial. The child dies in verse 18, and then in chapter 13, we have the sad story of Amnon and Tamar, and this is where Amnon, who is the eldest son of David, who was born by his wife Ahinoam, who was a Jezreelite, Amnon raped his half-sister Tamar. 2 years later, Absalom would kill Amnon, and that's in 2 Samuel chapter 13. And then after this, Absalom rebels against his father, seeking to overthrow David from his throne in chapter 15. You can read about chapter 15, verse 1, that is, it happened that Absalom provided himself with chariots and horses and 50 men to run before him. And so what Absalom was trying to do was sort of bring in a coup against his father and really succeeded in many ways in doing that, brought a lot of trial there. And so the result of this is in 2 Samuel chapter 15 and in verse 13, David flees Jerusalem. So we'll pick up the reading there in chapter 15, verse 13. A messenger came to David and saying that the hearts of the men of Israel are with Absalom. And David said to all of his servants who are with him at Jerusalem, arise and let us flee, or we shall not escape from Absalom. Make haste to depart, lest he overtake us suddenly and bring disaster upon us and strike this city with the edge of the sword. So now with all of this, David decides to gather his men. He's going to leave. And so he does leave. And so as he's putting all of this together and all the events that kind of happen, you can read about that in the few chapters there. We want to go to chapter 16 for kind of an unusual little part of this story that while David is trying to escape Jerusalem, getting away from his son Absalom, another character enters into the stage in the story. And in chapter 16 and in verse 5, as David is fleeing for his life from his son, a man from the family of the house of Saul came against David. And it says in 2 Samuel chapter 16 and in verse 5, that now when King David came to Bahurim, there was a man from the family of the house of Saul, whose name was Shimei, the son of Gera. Coming from there, he came out cursing continuously as he came. And he threw stones at David and at all the servants of King David, and all the people and all the mighty men were on his right hand and on his left. And also Shimei said thus when he cursed, "Come out, come out, you bloodthirsty man, you rogue. The Lord has brought upon you all the blood of the house of Saul, in whose place you have reigned, and the Lord has delivered the kingdom into the hand of Absalom, your son. So now you are caught in your own evil because you are a bloodthirsty man." Well then, Abishai, the son of Zeruiah, said to the king, "Why should this dead dog curse my lord the king? Please let me go over and take off his head." But the king said, "What have I to do with you, you sons of Zeruiah? So let him curse, because the Lord has said to him, 'Curse David.' Who then shall say, 'Why have you done so?'" And so David said to Abishai and all of his servants, "See how my son who came from my own body seeks my life. How much more now may this Benjamite? Let him alone. Let him curse, for so the Lord has ordered him. It may be that the Lord will look on my affliction and that the Lord will repay me with good for his cursing this day." And as David and his men went along the road, Shimei went along the hillside opposite him, cursed as he went, threw stones at him, kicked up dust. And the king and all the people who were with him became weary, and so they refreshed themselves there. That was just sort of an odd thing. Here's David, he's having to leave town, kind of like a dog with his tail between his legs, and he's, you know, fleeing from his son Absalom. And Shimei decides that he's just going to do what he's going to do. And he lives apparently close by there, and as they're going along, he's cursing and kicking dust and throwing rocks at all of these men. And, you know, I kind of like Abishai. It's like, "Lord, let me go just kill that boy. You know, let me just go up there and I'll just take that boy's head off right now." And he could do it. No, he was one of his mighty men. And I love what David said. And I think it's a very reflective thing. And I think that when you read this, when David replies to him, I think David understands that this is part of the consequence that he's still suffering because of Bathsheba. Because he could have. He could have just simply said, "You know, two or three of you guys go up there and just chop that guy in pieces." He could have done so because he was the king. And, you know, Shimei would not have been able to do anything. He'd have died right there on the spot. But David, I think, used that as part of that punishment of knowing that, you know, he's wrong, but he's got a point. I mean, I am suffering the consequences of what my sin, you know, had done. And so, you know, it's a very tough time, and Shimei is making it very hard for him, cursing him, kicking dust at him, and throwing rocks, and David just goes down the road and the way it goes. Well, as the story develops, Absalom, his, of course, treachery, really doesn't work out very well, and it's basically because he had the choice of two advisors. One of the advisors of Absalom that had actually gone off to be with him was Ahithophel. And Ahithophel was the grandfather of Bathsheba. And I suspect that there were more than a few people that knew what David did with Uriah. Obviously, when Uriah came home and David had realized, of course, that Bathsheba was pregnant with his child, he tried to cover it up, didn't succeed in doing so, gave an order by the hand of Uriah to Joab that, "I want you to go and have this man killed, but do it in battle." And so it's one of those things that, you know, it doesn't really stay with one person. It could have been that Joab would have been the only person that would have known about that. But actually, if you read about Joab and what a rascal he was a political person who was always motivating. And it seems to be, at least in my mind, that Ahithophel knew what David had done to his son-in-law and what he had done to Bathsheba. So when Absalom decided to rebel against David, Ahithophel went with Absalom because he was going to get David back for what he did. And so when they're advising Absalom of what to do, Ahithophel is there to tell him what to do. And basically says, "Let's just go take care of this thing." Well, then he listens to another fella named Hushai there in the 17th chapter. And what happens is that he listens to the advice instead of Ahithophel. He listens to the advice of Hushai. And actually, as a result of all of this, Absalom is going to be defeated. Sadly, Ahithophel, realizing that his counsel was not taken and that Absalom was going to be defeated, he goes to his house, sets his house in order, and kills himself. And that is the end of him. But Hushai, of course, all of this really has to do with the Lord. If you look in chapter 17 and in verse 14, again, we're just kind of hitting the highlights here to get the story together. If you look in chapter 17, 2 Samuel 17, verse 14, so Absalom and all the men of Israel said, the advice of Hushai the Archite is better than the advice of Ahithophel. For the Lord, you see, had purposed to defeat the good advice of Ahithophel to the intent that the Lord might bring disaster on Absalom. So Ahithophel had a good idea. And if Absalom would have done that, then David would have been, you know, destroyed. But he took the wrong advice. A lot of this had to do with God. And so Absalom, you know, is defeated. He is killed. He got his hair caught up. I don't ever have that problem. He got his hair caught up in the tree, and then Joab came and killed him. And David was very upset about that, and he mourned for his son Absalom. But what that meant is that now David can go back home. And so now we've got David coming back to Jerusalem. So let's go to chapter 19 and in verse 15 and kind of pick the story up there. All that's happened, the whole rebellion thing has been you know, put down. Sadly, Absalom's dead, Ahithophel is dead, and David is now coming back to Jerusalem. And as he comes back, who does he meet? 2 Samuel chapter 19 and in verse 15. Then the king returned and came to the Jordan, and Judah came to Gilgal to go to meet the king, to escort the king across the Jordan. And Shimei, the son of Gera, a Benjamite who was from Bahurim, hurried and came down with the men of Judah to meet King David. And you will notice that he's no longer kicking up dust and he is no longer throwing rocks. There were 1,000 men of Benjamin with him, and Ziba, the servant of the house of Saul, and his 15 sons and his 20 servants with him. And they went over to Jordan before the king, and a ferry boat went across to carry over the king's household and to do what he thought good. And Shimei, the son of Gera, fell down before the king when he had crossed the Jordan. And Shimei says to the king, do not let my lord impute iniquity to me, or remember what wrong your servant did on the day that my lord the king left Jerusalem, that the king should take it to heart. For I, your servant, know that I have sinned. Therefore, here I am, the first to come today of all the house of Joseph to come down to meet my lord the king. And here's Abishai, the son of Zerah, answered and said, shall not Shimei be put to death for this, because he cursed the Lord's anointed? The guy still wants to go and wax this guy, but, you know, he's told not to. David said, what have I to do with you, you sons of Zerah, that you should be adversaries to me today? Shall any man be put to death today in Israel? For do I not know that today I am king over Israel? Therefore the king said to Shimei, you shall not die. And the king swore to him. Well, good thing you did that, Shimei, because, you know, this guy over here wanted to kill you a few times. And if it hadn't been for David, you know, you would probably be dead as a hammer. And so that's kind of how things are left. And then you got the rebellion of Sheba, and the whole rest of the story of David kind of goes through there. And you end the book of 2 Samuel. And when you come into 1 Kings, David is old and he is about to die. So when you come to 1 Kings, then you have David giving his final instructions to Solomon. Well, David has not forgotten Shimei and not forgotten what he did to him. And there seems to be some concern that David has about him. So you go to the book of 1 Kings in chapter 1, verse 28. We find David is telling Bathsheba, come to me. She stands before the king, and the king took an oath and said, as the Lord lives, who has redeemed my life from every distress, just as I swore to you by the Lord God of Israel, saying, assuredly, Solomon, your son shall be king after me, and he shall sit on my throne in my place, so I certainly will do this day. And Bathsheba bowed her face to the earth, paid homage to the king, and said, "Let my lord King David live." Now he's going to pass the baton over to Solomon. And you go to chapter 2. We're going to pick it up in verse 8. I hope you're still with me here. 1 Kings 2, verse 8. And this is what David is telling Solomon. Concerned about one of those is, "And see, you have with you Shimei, the son of Gera, a Benjamite from Behurim, who cursed me with a malicious curse in the day when I went to Mahanaim," or wherever that is. "But he came down to meet me at the Jordan, and I swore to him of the Lord, saying that I will not put you to death with the sword. Now therefore, do not hold him guiltless, for you are a wise man and know what you ought to do to him, but bring his gray hair down to the grave with blood." So David said, "I promise that I will not kill you. I didn't say anything about my son not killing you." There seems to be, at least in David's knowledge of Shimei, that there was something really evil about this guy. We have to remember that when Shimei was cursing David, he wasn't just cursing David. He was cursing the Messiah. He was cursing the Anointed One. And the thing we have to realize about the kings of Israel, there were three kings in the United Kingdom. The first king was chosen by the people. How'd that work out? That didn't work out too good. They're the ones that chose Saul. And that didn't work out really well, although Saul reigned for 40 years. The second king was chosen by whom? God. So was the third king. But David was God's anointed. And you remember when David was chasing Saul all around the wilderness trying to kill him? There was a number of times David could have killed Saul. Why did he not do it? Because he was God's anointed. And you don't kill God's anointed. And the thing that Shimei was doing was not just cursing a man. He was cursing God's anointed. And he would pay for that with his life. Because of his pleading of mercy to David as he had come back, David extended mercy to him and said that you will not die. But again, from that point on until the time of David, there seems to be other things that have been going on. And he tells Solomon that you need to, specifically points him out and says that you need to remember Shimei, and you do not need to let his head go down to the grave without blood. David dies. Solomon begins his reign, actually by executing Adonijah. But if you go down to 1 Kings chapter 2, we see in verse 36 that Solomon now is dealing with Shimei. Then the king sent and called for Shimei and said to him, "Build yourself a house in Jerusalem and dwell there, and do not go out from there anywhere. For it shall be on the day that you go out and cross the brook Kidron, know for certain you shall surely die. Your blood shall be on your own head." Shimei said to the king, "The saying is good. As my lord the king has said, so your servant will do." So Shimei dwelt in Jerusalem many days. Okay. Now Solomon has given him mercy. Solomon has said, "You go build a house, you go stay in Jerusalem, and you'll be fine. You come out of there, I'm going to kill you. You cross the brook of Kidron, you're going to die." Shimei says, "Well, that's fair. I can do that." He does that for many days. But then look in verse 39. It happened at the end of 3 years that two slaves of Shimei ran away to Achish, the son of Maacah, the king of Gath. And they told Shimei, saying, "Look, your slaves are in Gath." So what does Shimei do? He arose, saddled his donkey, went to Achish at Gath to seek his slaves, and Shimei went and brought his slaves from Gath. Well, somebody told Solomon, what happened. Solomon was told that Shimei had gone from Jerusalem to Gath and had come back. The king sent and called for Shimei and said, "Did I not make you swear by the Lord and warn you, saying, know for certain that on the day that you go out and travel anywhere, you shall surely die? And you said to me, the word I have heard is good. Why then have you not kept the oath of the Lord and the commandment that I gave you?" The king said, moreover, to Shimei, "You know, as your heart acknowledges, all the wickedness that you did to my father David. Therefore, the Lord will return your wickedness on your head. But King Solomon shall be blessed, and the throne of David shall be established before the Lord forever. And so the king commanded Benhai, the son of Jehoiada, and I think he was smiling when he did this, apparently. He went out, and he struck him dead, and he died. And thus the kingdom was established in the hand of Solomon. Well, there's the sad story of Shimei. A man who we really know very little about, except for those really three things. Those stories that we have there about Shimei and what he did. But the story about Shimei is one that gives us three lessons, and then the lesson is yours. The first lesson is that Shimei had the wrong idea about the right man. The second thing that Shimei had done was that he was given grace, but he denied grace. And the third thing that Shimei did was he forgot that God does not forget. When we go back to the cursing part in 2 Samuel chapter 16 and in verse 5, Shimei is cursing David. And he probably has put to account David's involvement in the downfall of Saul. Because you'll notice that in the text as Shimei is introduced, that it says in chapter 16 and verse 5 that when King David came to Barium, there was a man from the family of the house of Saul. Well, you remember that whenever you're in a family and your dad's the king, or maybe even your uncle or your grandfather, there is a natural order of succession that, well, if anything happens, you're going to be there. You have the house of Saul established as the house of royalty. And you think in yourself, that's where the line of royalty is going to be. Whether you get to be king or not, maybe you get to be vice king or, secretary to the king or something like that. But you're still in the royal family. But what happened when God chose the house of Jesse is that he basically took the whole Sauline dynasty out of the picture. And this apparently really upset Shimei. And I think that as we think hard about it, we realize that Shimei really was a bad guy. Because he was so mad and he was so angry at what had happened here that he blamed David, probably, for the death of Saul. He blamed David for the death of Jonathan. He blamed David for the death of the whole Sauline family. And David had nothing to do with it. It was the will of God, number one. Again, God is the one that anointed David. God is the one that chose him. And they understood these kinds of things. Whenever the king was established, he was anointed. Samuel went and poured oil on the boy's head. And this was something that he just simply rejected. And he failed to appreciate the providence of God in these matters. And the reason that God rejected Saul and that dynasty, as you remember back in chapter 15, in verse 26, God had told Saul, you go to the Amalekites and you destroy them totally. Everybody. Man, woman, child, beast. I don't want anything left. What does Saul do? He goes and takes care of most of it. He brings back Agag and the best of it. And, Samuel comes to him and says, why didn't you do what God said? Well, I did what God said. No, you didn't. Oh, yes, I did. Well, what is the bleeding of the sheep, And what is the king Agag there? And so that is when in 1 Samuel 15, that's when God took the kingdom away from Saul. And so the death of Saul, that was the will of God. David didn't have anything to do with it. David became the king because of the will of God. And that was the difference. And the curse of Shimei came because of his bitterness and his rancor and his hostility towards a man who was the right man in the right place, because that was God's anointed. And he was making the wrong assumptions about these things, and he was just going off on this thing and throwing rocks and cursing David, and I mean malicious cursing. And not only that, he was doing it to the anointed of God. Now, when it happened, David could have just gone, go kill the guy, and he would have. But then we see that the mercy that was given, we'll talk about that in a moment, but the thing about it is, here is a man who is making this cursing against this guy, and it wasn't true. Maybe he should have come to David and said, you need to explain to me what happened, but he didn't. He just decided in his mind, this is the way it is, and buddy, I'm just going to go with it. And it became his death, because he was going on information that was wrong and probably resenting the loss of royalty, yes. But he unjustly charged David with being the cause of the ruin of the Sauline dynasty, or the dynasty. And he basically hated David. And I guess if he had been given an opportunity, he probably killed him. But he really hated it. That's how much he just despised this man. And he was a dangerous and a bad man. There are people like Shimei in the world. They have attitudes and dispositions about people that are just wrong. As a matter of fact, you and I both know one of the most famous people that has ever been falsely accused is who? Jesus Christ. Jesus tells us in Matthew chapter 11 that they accused him of being a wine bibber and a glutton. Wow. Really? I mean, here are men going around accusing the real anointed one, the one with the big A, the one with the big M, the one with the, you know. They were accusing him of being a wine bibber and a glutton. And there are those people that have that information that they just love to relish, and they like to pass it along, and they like to talk about what a rascal these people are, and they are gossipers. They are abusers of character. They are creating and committing character assassination on people that do not deserve that. And it is the power and the evil that is in the tongue. I mean, you look at James chapter 3 and you realize what God tells us about the tongue. And boy, Shimei, he had this thing all wrapped up. The Lord tells us in James chapter 3 and in verse 2 that for we stumble in many things, and if anyone does not stumble in word, he is a perfect man, able also to bridle the whole body. Indeed, we put bits in horses' mouth that they may obey us, and we turn their whole body. Look also at ships, although they are so large and are driven by fierce winds, that they are turned by very small rudder wherever the pilot desires. Even so the tongue is a little member and boasts great things. See how great a forest a little fire kindles. And the tongue is a fire. It is a world of iniquity. The tongue is so set among our members that it defiles the whole body and sets on fire the course of nature, and it is set on fire by hell. Every kind of beast and bird and reptile and creature of the sea is tamed and has been tamed by man, but no man can tame the tongue. It's an unruly evil, full of deadly poison. With it we bless our God and Father, and with it we curse men who have been made in the similitude of God. Out of the same mouth proceed blessings and cursings. My brethren, these things ought not to be so. One of the most malicious things that people do is gossip and murmur and talk about things that they have no idea what they're talking about. And it can get us into a lot of trouble. I think I've got time. Dabo Sweeney, who is a coach for the Clemson football team, was being interviewed, and some reporter said, well, Dabo, did you hear what Steve Spurrier said about you and blah, 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 blah. And old Dabo, he just went right after it, went on this long, long tirade about what a rascal old Steve Spurrier was. Guess what? Steve Spurrier never said it. But now it's all over the internet, and this was a few years ago. We ever done that? Nah, we've never done anything like that. We've never made accusations and said things about people without first checking to make sure it's going to be true. That's the insidious nature of the tongue and how poisonous it can be to destroy characters. If you look at Galatians chapter 5, have you ever noticed that in that list of the works of the flesh, do you notice how many have to do with the language and the tongue that's in there? I mean, you look at things like uncleanness and lewdness and idolatry and hatred and contentions and jealousies and outbursts of wrath and selfish ambitions and dissensions and heresies and all of that kind of stuff. Do you know how much of that has to do with what we do with our tongue? There's a lot of Shimeis running around here cursing and saying things they ought not to be saying because they're not telling the truth. Now again, if Shimei was a man of character, he would have gone to David and said, you need to explain to me what happened here. And David would have told him, I didn't have anything to do with Saul and David. That's the will of God. They'd have been friends for life. Oh no, Shimei, I'm going to curse this guy and throw stones at him. And the problem of cursing somebody is that you've done this, is that when he was kicking dust, you know a lot of it came back on him. And whenever you throw mud, guess what? You've got to get dirty to do it. And that's what he was doing. He was saying the wrong things about the right man, and particularly he was the anointed of God. The wisdom literature, I find it interesting in Proverbs, has a lot to say about the tongue. Proverbs 10, let's look and see what the wise man said about how we use our language. Proverbs 10, verse 18. Whoever hides hatred has lying lips, and whoever spreads slander is a fool. Let me tell you, we need to speak the language that God speaks. You and I pass along stories that are not true, and we know it to be not true. We are fools. And we can be condemned fools if we keep doing it. We like to hear gossip. The only problem with a gossiper and a person who likes to tell stories is they like to build on those stories. And in the multitude of words, sin is not lacking. But he who restrains his lips is wise. The tongue of the righteous is choice silver. The heart of the wicked is worth little. The lips of the righteous feed many, but fools die for lack of wisdom. Gossip is a serious thing. Proverbs 26 and verse 17. Says that he who passes by, I think this is a funny one. If you're looking for humor in the Bible, this is kind of funny. You can imagine this in your mind. If you want to chuckle out loud, you can. He who passes by and meddles in a quarrel not his own is like one who takes a dog by the ears. You ever done that? Once? You take a dog by the ears, you got a handful. Well, that's what happens when you go by and meddle. You hear something. And how many times have you done that? You know, we hear something. We think, oh, did you hear something? We didn't hear the whole conversation. We've been maybe accused of things. And you think, you didn't get that whole conversation. See, the character of a righteous man is going to inquire. The character of a righteous man is going to ask and to go to people. Matthew 18, the whole idea, if you got aught against a brother, you go to him. But the character of an assassin is that you're going to hear something. And you're going to get into something you really don't want to get a hold of. He goes on to say then, verse 18, like a madman who throws firebrands, arrows and death is the man who deceives his neighbor and says, oh, I was only joking. Where there's no wood, the fire goes out, and where there is no tail-bearing, strife ceases. And as charcoal is to burning coals and wood to fire, so is a contentious man to kindle a strife. The words of a tail-bearer are like tasty trifles, and they go down into the inmost body. You see, the problem with this is that you think, well, I just can't wait to tell you. You're not going to believe what I heard about so-and-so. Let me tell you something. If they're going to gossip about your friend, they're going to gossip about you too. The only thing good about it is if they gossip about you, they're going to leave everybody else alone. But that's an evil heart. And the Lord condemns it. Fervent lips with a wicked heart are like earthenware covered with silver dross. He who hates, listen to this, verse 24. He who hates disguises it with his lips and lays up deceit within himself. When he speaks kindly, do not believe him, for there are seven abominations in his heart. Though his hatred is covered by deceit, his wickedness shall be revealed before the assembly. Verse 27, does this not sound like Shimei? Whoever digs a pit will fall into it, and he who rolls a stone will have it roll back on him. A lying tongue hates those who are crushed by it, and a flattering mouth works ruin. That's the danger of insidious words. Shimei ought to teach us that we need to be careful about what we say, about who we talk about. The second thing about Shimei is that he was given grace twice, three times really. The first time he was given grace is when David didn't allow his mighty man to go chop the guy into pieces. He didn't know that, but that was, okay, you're going to live. When David's coming back, David decided to give Shimei grace when he just could have said, okay, I remember what you did. You cursed the Holy One, the Anointed One. I'm just going to kill you right here at the Jordan. And he could have. But he didn't do that. And what David did was he said, I will give you grace. And although David had not committed any murder against the house of Saul, and although Shimei's cursing was nothing but malicious blasphemy, he felt that it came upon him because of his sins, though not for the sin imputed to him. He was therefore forbade by putting, he did not want him to be put to death. And really, I think it's a reflective moment when he is cursing David, and David says, well, you know, maybe the cursing is a consequence of the wrath of God. And David used that as an opportunity to remind himself of what had happened and showed his mercy by not killing him. And so David allows his cursor to live actually twice. And then when David dies, I'm sure Shimei is thinking, what's going to happen to me now? But then Solomon gave him grace. He said, you go to Jerusalem, you build the house, and you stay there. And as long as you stay there, you can die an old man. Shimei said, that's a good idea. I'm going to go build me a house. And he stayed in Jerusalem. I mean, what else do you want? Everything was opportunity for the man to die because Solomon could have had him killed too. And Shimei saw the grace of God in Solomon's decision. He said to Solomon, this is a good thing. Who wouldn't say that's a good thing, you know? Why is grace given? Why is grace given? Grace is given to show a need for repentance and a change of heart. Why does God extend grace? Because he's trying to show people that I want to give you a chance and an opportunity to change your heart. Now, whether Shimei knew that in the first case when David did not have him killed, I don't know. But surely in the second one, when he realized that things were bad because Absalom is dead and the whole thing was over and he was probably going to get killed by David, when he comes to David and David says, you're not going to die as long as I live, Shimei should have changed his heart and said, okay, I'm not going to ever do that again. I'm going to serve this guy. He's my man. I'm going to be just as good a person as I can be. And then if he would come to Solomon and said, okay, you know, thank you for your grace. And even when he heard about his servants, now here's the thing about Shimei. When he heard about his servants going to Gath, he could have gone to Solomon and said, you know, I got a problem. My servants are over there and I need to get them back. What can I do? Solomon would have said, okay, I'll give you a 2-day pass. Go get them and bring them back. Either I'll go get him, but he didn't. Shimei just said, okay, I'm going to go do what I want to do. I mean, it's really sad that Shimei would give up all of that grace given to him so much. But the thing is, he didn't change his heart. Is that not what God is doing? Peter tells us in 2 Peter chapter 3 and verse 3, knowing this verse, the scoffers will come in the last days, walking according to their own lust. Where's the promise of his coming? Since the fathers fell, everything continues as it was from the beginning of the creation. Peter says they willfully forget that by the word of God the heavens were of old and the earth standing out of water and in the water by which the world that then existed perished, being flooded with water. But the heavens and the earth, which are now preserved by the same word, are reserved for fire until the day of judgment and perdition of ungodly men. Do you know what grace was? You and I experienced grace today. Do you know that? Now, I told some of you not to come at 6 o'clock, and apparently a lot of them are out looking at the stars right now, but... Do you realize that when we assembled this morning and we talked about the, you know, things and invitation and all this and opportunity, do you know you've had grace since that time? Because now we're still here. Isn't that great? And maybe by the will of God, we'll have grace tomorrow. Every day is a day of grace because God allows us to live. God allows the world to continue as it is. And so that's the thing we need. Opportunity is there. And the sad thing is that we stand before God in judgment. How sad for many people who think, you know, I lived all that time and I had all those opportunities and I wasted them because I wasted God's grace. And God is not willing that any should perish. Verse 15 of chapter 3, consider that the long-suffering of God is salvation, as also our beloved Paul, accordingly in the wisdom given him, has written. God is not willing that any should perish, and that this is the long-suffering of God is salvation. And the long-suffering of David to Shimei was salvation. The long-suffering of Solomon was salvation. And he rejected that. How sad that people reject the grace of God. The grace of God saves because it is long-suffering. But the grace of God will end one day. Okay, last and final point. This is the one we always forget. Shimei forgot that God does not forget. He built a house. He lived in Jerusalem. And the first year was pretty good. Second year was even better. Third year was great. Who remembers after 3 years, right? What's the big deal? I mean, by now, Solomon's forgotten. He's forgotten. Everybody's forgotten. And there's really nothing to worry about. Everything is okay. We've kind of got it. Samuel said, you're there, but 3 years have passed. The thing that Shimei did not remember was that time does not remove the consequence of sin. You cannot ignore it. It's not going to go away. Because even after 3 years, he could have said, well, okay, statute of limitations. There is no statute of limitations with God. It's not like, okay, I'm just going to do this and God is going to forget it, because, I mean, that may work in the natural world. And there's a lot of things we may just forget what happened and it's just sort of out of sight and out of mind. He disobeyed the king's command And he was reminded, I have not forgotten what I told you 3 years ago. And it wouldn't matter if it had been 5 years or 20 years. Because Solomon reminded Shimei that his word had not changed. What do you think I am? Just because 3 years have passed, I'm just going to ignore what I told you to do or not to do? Why would you think that? Here's the lesson we have to take from that. We talked this morning about how immense God is. His knowledge is so immense. And connected to His knowledge is remembrance. My problem is this. My forgetter is a lot better than my rememberer. I can't remember a lot of things, especially anymore. What was I saying? God does not forget anything. That's how massive His mind is. In Ecclesiastes, in chapter 8, here's the problem. Solomon addresses this question, and we wonder about this sometimes in our life. He says, I saw the wicked buried, who had come and gone from the place of holiness, and they were forgotten in the city which they had sown, where they had so done. This also is vanity. Notice verse 11. Because the sentence against an evil work is not executed speedily, therefore the heart of the sons of men is fully set to them to do evil. And though a sinner does evil 100 times and his days are prolonged, yet I surely know that it will be well with those who fear God, who fear before Him. But if it will not be well for the wicked, nor will he prolong his days, which are but a shadow, because he does not fear before God. You see, the problem with a sentence against an evil work is not executed speedily, and I would suggest there is some mindset to this, that if punishment came rather quickly with the crime, there'd be a lot less crime. That's kind of like a child. A child that is corrected non-speedily, they don't even know what it's for and it doesn't have any effect. And we think that, well, I know this has happened, but it's been a long time and God's forgotten and it's okay. No, it ain't. No, it's not. God didn't forget anything. And sometimes we may look at our life and think, well, you know, boy, I did that, but, you know, God's forgot about it because I forgot about it. Nobody knows about it and all that, but it's all going to be. No, God remembers everything. There is nothing that God does not remember. As a matter of fact, in the last part of chapter 12, verse 14, God's going to bring every work into judgment, including every secret thing, good or evil. You may have forgotten it. Somebody else may have forgotten it. Somebody or you may not even, others may not even know what about it. You know about it, but I'm going to tell you, God knows what I've done in my life. And I can pretend like it doesn't matter. It does matter. And it doesn't matter if it was 3 years ago, 5 years ago, 10 years ago, or 100 years ago. God does not forget. Shimei forgot that God does not forget. And even after 3 years, the law still applied. How sad it's going to be when we stand before God and God says, you remember? And we say, oh, I forgot about that. No. God does not forget. A sure, though late judgment attends those that dare lift up either their hand or tongue against the sacred person of God's people. How much less will the God of heaven suffer unavenged the insolences and blasphemies against His divine majesty? It is a fearful word. He should not be just if He should hold these guiltless. God will not forget. Sins of the tongue will not go unpunished. Shimei found that out. Grace is God's love. But His long-suffering is going to come to an end one day. Judgment delayed is not judgment forgotten. Shimei had every opportunity in the world to live a prosperous, blessed life. But he made 3 mistakes and paid for it with his life. We need to learn from Shimei and know that God loves us and He is willing, long-suffering, and not that any should perish. But He wants us all to come to repentance, and He wants us all to be found in Him and to be the kind of people that God wants us to be so that we can be with Him in eternity. Consider these things just together.